And a happy birthday, Ramon. It's kind of bad coming at the end of the meeting because he's been wished happy birthday so many times. He's getting sick of being 70 and wishes that he wasn't going to turn 70. I thank the organizers for inviting me to come here. I've been to Girona before. Last time, I've enjoyed it even more this time. And when I told my daughter a few weeks ago that I was going to Girona again, she was even more excited than I was, which surprised me. This is a picture of her. I'm not sure if you can see her very clearly there. But I said, why are you so excited that I'm going to Girona? Why is this so exciting for you? And she said, well, it's so you can buy something for me, Daddy, and bring it back. And so yesterday I bought her some Cola Cow. I hope you can see that. And now all her dreams have come true. Okay, so I'm going to talk to you today about something that probably you have not heard of before, POSMOM. The title of this talk, The Unobserved Observable, is in a way the key to the talk. And I think that Patrick Bultink probably already has his question in mind. So let's see where we go with this. I'm going to start off by telling you some theory. Now, you all know the uncertainty principle. And any of you who know what POSMOM means are probably already thinking he can't talk about this. This is not allowed. Well, I'm going to tell you that I'm aware of the uncertainty principle. I'm going to introduce this variable called the POSMOM, and I'm going to talk to you about its density. Now, this is a meeting about densities that we are at here, and we've heard about many densities, but we have not heard about the POSMOM density previously. Then I'm going to show you some results, first of all for harmonic oscillators, because that's where everybody begins. Then for some hydrogenic ions, because that's what everybody does next. And finally, I will mention some larger systems at the end. But the main point of this is not to talk about large atoms and molecules, but really to introduce you to the concept of this new variable, which might seem a bit strange. Okay, so just on Monday alone, we had a lot of very nice lectures about what I will call the electron density in position space. There was, of course, the opening lecture by Professor Carbo, but then we had a bunch of other lectures which dealt with different aspects of the position space density, all very interesting and all very important at a meeting like this. And then right at the end of the day, we had a lecture which involved the electron densities in both position space and in momentum space, which was good to see, some Fermi holes in momentum space. But are these the only spaces that one can consider? Or can we consider maybe some other spaces? What other spaces are there where we could talk about electron densities? Certainly we are very comfortable in position space. Patrick told me he's uncomfortable outside position space, and I think most people are. Most people feel even momentum space is a little bit hard to understand, but maybe there are even weirder spaces than that. So yes, indeed, we can talk about the electron density in other spaces, and one that we would really like to talk about is the electron density in phase space. It would be very exciting if we could talk about where electrons are and where they are going. Wouldn't that be fun? You would all love to do that, wouldn't you? The problem is, Werner Heisenberg says that we're not allowed to do that. The uncertainty principle says that we are not allowed to talk about the position and the momentum of a particle at the same time. That's a problem. So what does the uncertainty principle exactly say? It says that the measured uncertainties in delta x and delta p in one dimension must exceed some fundamental constant. We cannot know these things to greater accuracy than that inequality will allow. This, for me, is very frustrating. I'm a very classical guy. I like to know where things are and where they are going. And when I was taught the Heisenberg uncertainty principle many years ago, I was convinced it was wrong. It couldn't possibly be true. We couldn't be so limited in this way. Unfortunately, it seems that we are. But does this mean that we can never discuss x and p together? Are we never allowed to use the words position and momentum in the same sentence? Well, no, we are not forbidden from doing that, but we have to be careful that when we discuss position and momentum in the same sentence, we must not violate the uncertainty principle. That's the rule. So we are allowed to do it subject to that constraint. How can we do this? How can we go into this brave new world where we come very close to violating the uncertainty principle. Well, there is Werner Heisenberg looking disapproving because he probably doesn't like what I'm doing here. But here is my student. Oh, dear. Well, that's a silhouette of my student. There are at least two people in the audience who know what he looks like. This is Yves Bernard, who is a Swiss student. You're all supposed to say boo when I say Switzerland. He was extremely excited a few days ago. He came rushing into the office going like this after Switzerland beat Spain. But unfortunately, a few days later, he was very sad. Anyway, Yves' PhD project has concerned this problem of how we can discuss position and momentum at the same time. And he has achieved some success. And it's his work that I'm going to tell you about now. Okay, so what is the posmom of a particle? Well, suppose that you have a particle and it has a position r and a momentum p about some origin. Okay, we always measure positions relative to some origin. We always measure momenta relative to some origin. So we have some particle. At the moment, it's a classical particle because I've used those two in the same sentence, right? We can define a variable called the posmom, which is the dot product, the scalar product of r and p. And in classical mechanics, this is no problem at all. In fact, this variable has been discussed in classical mechanics. The moment of inertia of this particle, you all remember moments of inertia, defined as mr squared, r is the distance from the origin. The moment of inertia is connected to the posmom. How is that? Well, if you differentiate the moment of inertia with respect to time, you obtain, apart from a factor of 2, the posmom. So remember that. The posmom is the time derivative of the moment of inertia of a particle around some origin. In classical mechanics, that's no problem at all. Does Werner Heisenberg allow us to talk about this quantity in quantum mechanics? Are we allowed to talk about the rate of change of the moment of inertia? Are we allowed to talk about r dot p? And the answer is yes, we are allowed to do that. And the reason is that if I tell you what r dot p is, if I tell you I have a quantum particle and r dot p equals 5, it does not tell you what r is and what p is. There are many possible values that r and p could take that will give the value 5 for their scalar product. So we have not violated the uncertainty principle yet. What about generating the probability density? I'm going to call it big S of little s. So big S is the density, little s is the variable. Can we find that from quantum mechanics? The distribution of S for a quantum mechanical particle? Well, of course, the answer is yes, right? I'm standing up here. It'd be very strange if I said no at this point. And we can use Dirac's transformation theory, which I'll show you in a moment, to do this quite simply, surprisingly simply. And the final question, which you may be asking yourself, is why should I care? Am I interested in knowing about the posmom? Who is this guy anyway who's telling me about the posmom? Why do I care? And here is my answer for the moment. The posmom gives you information about electron trajectories. Now you should be booing again. Ooh, electron trajectories. This cannot possibly be allowed. Can you talk about the trajectory of an electron? Certainly not. Maybe. Let's see. So let me give you a picture which will give you some indication of how to interpret posmom in a physical way. Here's a picture of an origin. The origin is this point right in the middle here. And I'm imagining a particle either going around here on the red loop or going around on the blue loop. Now, if you can see what this picture is showing, on the red loop, the particle's moment of inertia is changing a lot. It goes from being quite small here to larger and larger and larger, and then small, back again, large, small, large, small. This particle going around here, his moment of inertia about this origin is actually constant. His distance from the origin is constant. The moment of inertia is mr squared. So the rate of change of the moment of inertia is 0. It's a classical particle. So you can see that in these two pictures, the particle on the left has a variable posmom. It's changing, small, large. The one on the right has a constant posmon. This means, in classical terms, the distribution of the posmon for the particle on the left is broad. It goes positive, negative, positive, negative. The distribution of the guy on the right is narrow. And here are some pictures in case you don't know what broad and narrow mean. So this gives you already some idea about how we can interpret the posmon of a particle. If we can calculate its density and we see that it is a broad density, then maybe it's telling us that this particle's moment of inertia about the origin is changing a lot in time, whereas if we see a narrow moment, narrow posmon density, it's telling us that the moment of inertia is not changing very much. All right, how do we do this properly using proper quantum mechanics? Well, most of you, I'm sure, know this kind of thing. I'm going to go through it fairly fast because either you know it and it's trivial, or you don't know it and you don't want to know it. So either way, I'm going to go through quickly. So the first thing you do is you write down the quantum mechanical operator for the momentum. It's the derivative with respect to position. And that allows you to write down the quantum mechanical operator for the posmon. You have to symmetrize. You do x operator p plus p operator x. And you do substitute in, and it's very easy to show that the operator for posmon is given by this expression here. For those of you who care, this operator is unbounded and it's self-adjoint, and those are the requirements for this property, this variable, to be a quantum mechanical observable. This is something that can be observed, whatever observed means. What comes next? Well, now that you've found the operator for the new variable, you try to find the eigenfunctions of that operator. The eigenfunctions satisfy that eigenvalue equation, and these eigenfunctions come in two flavors. One set of functions on the positive axis. The thing to notice here, it looks a little bit complicated, but really this is just x to a complex power. The eigenfunctions are just x to a complex power on the positive axis, and there are very similar ones on the negative axis, x to a complex power. So that's great. We now know the eigenfunctions of our posmon operator, and this allows us to use Dirac transformation theory to compute the posmon wave function. So if we know the position wave function, psi of x, we've heard a lot about psi of x, then we can obtain the momentum, the posmon wave function in this way, using that full spectrum of its eigenfunctions. And because you remember f, these eigenfunctions were x to a power, a complex power, this is really just a Mellin transform. For those of you who know what Mellin transforms are, you recognize it. So it's not so tough, maybe. And of course, we can then obtain the posmon density by squaring the modulus of that posmon wave function. Isn't that great? And the theory here, which I've shown you in one dimension, is very easily extended to three dimensions, which we care about, or six dimensions, or any other number that you may be interested in. The problem is that these Mellin transforms aren't so easy to do, except in very simple cases. These are tough, particularly the high-dimensional Mellin transforms, quite nasty. So what do? We take an alternative approach. There's a different way of getting to the posmon density, which is much nicer. It brings a smile to your face, I hope. What you do is this. First, I have to remind you of some theory that you already know. Suppose you have a particle whose position wave function is psi of r, okay? How do you find the momentum wave function of that guy? Well, we all know that you just take the Fourier transform of the position wave function, and this gives you the momentum wave function. They are connected by a Fourier transform. That's really nice and really easy. And then you can square those two densities, the position wave function and momentum wave function, to make the position density and the momentum density. And we use these things, and we've heard about these things during this conference. And remember, these things, of course, can be measured. An electron density in position space, electron density in momentum space can be measured. These are the observables, not the wave functions below them. Now, you all know that. Maybe you don't know this, which is rather beautiful, where we introduce autocorrelations. What do we do here? Suppose we now introduce the Fourier transform of the electron density in position space. I'm going to call that rho hat. Hat means it's Fourier transform, okay? The Fourier transform of rho of r and the Fourier transform of pi of p, the momentum density. So that's rho hat and pi hat. What is the interesting thing about these guys? Well, you can use the convolution theorem quite easily to show something a bit unexpected, and that is that the Fourier transform of the position density is related to the momentum wave function. And this is called an autocorrelation integral. So if you know the momentum wave function and find its autocorrelation, it gives you the Fourier transform of the position density. Is your head spinning yet? Maybe you know all this stuff already. Maybe, maybe not. And there's a flip side to that, of course, which is that if you take the autocorrelation of the position wave function, it gives you the Fourier transform of the momentum density. That's nice, isn't it? This is not new stuff. This has been known for decades, but maybe it's not widely known. This interesting connection between the densities in position and momentum space and the autocorrelations of the other wave functions. These kinds of integrals are called autocorrelations. Well, we have introduced something new called a hyperbolic autocorrelation. And the hyperbolic autocorrelation works like this. We are interested in the posmom density, S of S, so its Fourier transform would be S hat. And S hat, remarkably enough, is related to the position and momentum wave functions through what we call a hyperbolic autocorrelation. So what do? You take the position wave function and you dilate it by e to the k over 2, and you anti-dilate it by e to the minus k over 2, and you form this overlap integral, and that gives you the Fourier transform of the posmom density. Whoa! And maybe even more beautifully, you can do exactly the same thing with the momentum wave function. Maybe you don't have the position wave function and you don't want to take a Fourier transform. You're tired of taking Fourier transforms. Don't bother. Just find the hyperbolic autocorrelation of the momentum wave function. That will also give you the Fourier transform of the posmom density. These two things are identical. Two equally valid routes to finding the Fourier transform of the posmom density, the thing that we want. We call these kinds of integrals hyperbolic autocorrelations. They're almost like autocorrelations, but they involve a scaling rather than a shifting. Normal correlations involve a shift. These involve a scaling. Okay, so here is actually a theorem. That's really neat that you can write down a theorem, and I've used a larger font for this theorem because it's very important, that if you would like to know the posmom density for a particle, all you have to do is find the inverse Fourier transform of S hat. And to find S hat, it's the hyperbolic autocorrelation of the position or momentum wave function. So posmom really sits between position and momentum space. Posmom space sits between those two. And you can come to it equally well from either side. Some of you may know the Wigner distribution, and the Wigner distribution has the same kind of feel to it. The Wigner distribution, Wigner was interested in trying to find joint information about position and momentum, and he cooked up an animal, but it's not a nice animal. It's not good quantum mechanics, and the Wigner density is sometimes negative, it's not so nice. This is all rigorous quantum mechanically. So this S of S is a true quantum mechanical density that you can calculate in this way. Well, you're amazed and you're thinking, what do these things look like? You'd love to see a posmom density, okay? Oh, no, just before we get there, sorry, I need to show you a pretty picture, very pretty picture made by Eve, the student whose silhouette you saw before, and that's this picture here. Now, this picture shows the interrelationships between all of the things that I've mentioned. Here's the position wave function, the momentum wave function, the position density, which is found from the position wave function by a blue arrow. Blue means you do the square modulus. Then you can take a Fourier transform to make this guy, and you can also get that guy from the momentum wave function using an autocorrelation. And here is the position, the posmon density, its Fourier transform. All of these things are beautifully connected, sometimes with one-way arrows and sometimes with two-way arrows that allow you to go both ways. And you can spend a whole afternoon moving around this circle. It's lots of fun. All right, now I'm going to show you some examples. First of all, the one-dimensional harmonic oscillator. We all studied this. We all know what the one-dimensional harmonic oscillator looks like in position space. It's a Gaussian, right? The ground state, anyway, is a simple Gaussian along a line. What does the posmon look like for, or what does the momentum wave function look like? It's also a Gaussian, because the Fourier transform of a Gaussian is a Gaussian. Maybe the posmon density will be a Gaussian too. Do we? No, it's not. So there's the ground state wave function. I've used a normalized Gaussian here. For a 1D oscillator, the exponent here is alpha, but you'll observe in a moment that alpha disappears. The hyperbolic autocorrelation, you put that Gaussian into our hyperbolic autocorrelation integral, and you find that S hat is equal to the square root of Sheck K. That's a bit unexpected. You probably weren't expecting to see that. Sheck, S-E-C-H, that's 1 over cosh, if you don't inhabit hyperbolic space very much. And if you take the Fourier inverse transform of that, you find the posmon density. And it involves the gamma function with a complex argument, which is a bit unexpected. So the position density is a Gaussian, the momentum density is a Gaussian, the posmon density is that thing. Well, you all know what that looks like, don't you? Maybe not. So let me show you in a moment what it does look like. First, I'm going to show you the two-dimensional harmonic oscillator. Here's a particle oscillating in XY space. It's still a Gaussian in position space, the ground state. And the hyperbolic correlation now is Sheck. Not the square root of Sheck, just Sheck. And the inverse Fourier transform of that is also Sheck, but Sheck of pi s over 2. Interesting. What do these things look like? Let's draw some pictures. I don't know if you can see the colors very well, but this tallest one here is the posmon density for the one-dimensional harmonic oscillator. The middle one is the posmon density for the two-dimensional harmonic oscillator. The greenish one, the bottom one, is the posmon density for a three-dimensional harmonic oscillator. And you can probably guess what a four-dimensional one looks like. They just get flatter and flatter. So in general, the posmon density becomes broader as the dimensionality, the space, the dimensionality of the space gets greater. I forgot to mention before, let me just go back and mention again, this posmon density does not involve the exponent alpha. Why is that? It's because in position space, as alpha is increased, the wave function gets smaller and smaller and smaller. But in momentum space, it gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And R dot P just cancels out the effect of alpha. So all harmonic oscillators have those posmon densities, irrespective of whether they are very tight harmonic oscillators or very loose harmonic oscillators. Interesting. Invariance to dilation. Hydrogenic ions, let's become a little bit more chemical here. Oh, and a little bit smaller in the font. So that's the, you can find this in a textbook, that's the wave function in position space for any bound state of a hydrogenic ion. What do we see there? This is a Laguerre polynomial, a spherical harmonic, and an exponential, and then this is just all normalization junk. And you can show, it does take a bit of work, to show that the hyperbolic autocorrelation is given by this expression, where this P function is a Jacobi polynomial. You really don't care, do you? But you do care that it can be worked out. The answer exists, and there it is. And then you have to take the inverse Fourier transform of that to find the posmon density, and here it is. I couldn't fit it on one line. It involves a hypergeometric function. This is not very nice looking in general. That's the general expression. But let me show you some particular cases which look a lot less forbidding than that. So we're doing hydrogenic ions. Remember, of course, hydrogenic ions have a nuclear charge Z. Some of them are quite small, some of them are quite big. But of course, the posmon density will be invariant to Z. So you don't see Z in the formulae that you now see. So here is the posmon density for the 1s state of the hydrogen atom or any hydrogenic ion. And here is the one for the 3d state and the 3s state. So actually these don't look so horrible now that they're not written as hypergeometric functions anymore. They're actually all of the same form. They are all even polynomials in S multiplied by Schenck pi S. Who knows why? What do these things look like? Not so different to your eyes anyway from the hydrogen from the harmonic oscillator densities. This is the 1s density. This is the 2p. This is the 3d. These are the nodeless, or at least the radial nodeless states of the hydrogen atom, and they really do look like the ground states that I showed you before of the harmonic oscillators. And you notice that in these kinds of states, these are the states with maximum L, S equals zero is the most likely value. All of these things have a maximum at S equals zero. So remember that in these states, S equals zero. Now what does S equals zero mean? It means the moment of inertia is not changing. That is a most likely value in these states. Here are some other states. Now I'm showing you the 1s, 2s, 3s. So these are all S states with more and more nodes, radial nodes. And you see now quite different behavior. This is the 1s, which we've seen before. This one is the 2s, and this one is the 3s. And what you observe now is that as we increase n, keeping L equals zero, the posmon density develops more and more structure, maxima and minima. And the S equals zero value becomes less and less likely. That's interesting as well. One way to quantify these functions without drawing pictures of them all the time is to calculate the variance of the posmon density. Some of these posmon densities are quite spread out, some of them are quite narrow, and you can show, and it only takes about 2 days of work, you can show that the variance of S is given by this very nice formula involving N and L. So for any state of the hydrogen ion atom, you can substitute in N and L and find out the variance of the posmon density. But you can see just by looking at that formula that as L increases, the variance becomes smaller, and as N increases, the variance gets larger. Here are some examples again, 1s, 2s, 2p, 3s, 3p, 3d. You can see the values of the variance of the posmon density, and they just show what we just said before. The very smallest value is for the 1s, the largest value here is for the 4s density, and here are some pictures for the n equals 3 densities. Well, you can just see that the broader the density is, the larger its variance is. That's not very surprising. Now, some of you may already have made this kind of connection in your mind if you've done some semi-classical theory and you are familiar with the Einstein-Brewan-Keller theory of the hydrogen ions. Actually, it doesn't really matter whether it's EBK or one of the other semi-classical models. They're all rather similar. You may have seen pictures like this showing the semi-classical orbits of electrons in different states of the hydrogen atom. So the 5s orbit, this always surprises people, the 5s orbit is extremely eccentric, and the 5g is almost circular, and the other ones are in the middle. On the right, I've shown you the quantum mechanically rigorous posmon densities for the same states. And interestingly, we see that the 5s state has the largest variance, and that's telling you that S equals zero is quite unlikely. Larger values of S are likely. And that, if you remember back to the physical interpretation, that's consistent with a particle whose moment of inertia is changing a lot. At the other end of the spectrum, 5G, the most likely value is S equals zero. That's telling you a particle whose moment of inertia about the origin is not changing very much. And that's this big black circle here. So we find a very beautiful consistency between the quantum mechanically exact posmon densities on the right and these semi-classical, not exact, orbits on the left. So this posmon stuff seems to agree with, well, agree as much as it should agree with much, much older semi-classical ideas. This is good. We've implemented, we being Eve, of course, has implemented the calculation of posmon densities in the new version of QCAM, which will be released soon. And you can use that to calculate not just the hydrogen atom, but you can use it to calculate the posmon density in an arbitrary molecule using an arbitrary Gaussian basis set. So you have to generate all the integrals that you need, but all of these integrals are available in nice closed form expressions, which is really cool. Eve has used this to do Hartree-Fock, MP2, and coupled cluster calculations with a range of Gaussian basis sets on atoms and molecules. The atoms paper has been submitted. The molecules paper is still being worked on. So soon you will be able to see pictures of S for all kinds of systems, and you'll be able to get some idea of whether the electrons in your favorite molecule are going in circles or ellipses or what their trajectories are like. So we believe that this posmon variable does shed some light on electron trajectories. Now, it does not tell you where a particle, the electron, will be at what time and what its velocity will be. That's a real trajectory. But this gives you information about the types of trajectory that the electrons are following, which is information that you cannot get from the position density or the momentum density. And finally, this leads to the possibility of a new kind of spectroscopy. Now, this is not something that comes along every day. New forms of spectroscopy are rare, but we all know about position spectroscopy. You can use X-rays or neutrons to find where electrons are in a system, and everybody does this. It's very popular. You can also use electrons, again, usually, to find the momentum of the electrons in a system. This is Compton or EE spectroscopy, not so widely used, but still important. And here is the possibility of a third kind of spectroscopy, which we call posmometry. So here is a position density and a momentum density for the 2s state of the hydrogen atom. And here, the solid line is the posmon density for that same state. This gives new information which is not available from this picture or this picture. And in particular, this gives new information about the kinds of trajectories that are followed by a 2s electron. So my suggestion to you, if any of you are young and full of enthusiasm, you're feeling entrepreneurial, is go into business, found a company, start manufacturing posmometers, and you'll soon be a millionaire. That's all I have to say.
Thank you very much. We have only 2 seconds for questions. Yeah, professor.
I have just one.
Yeah, please.
Short question. Remark is the following. There is nothing special in operators which combine momentum and position, for example, angular momentum.
That's right.
What is special with angular momentum is that it's a constant of motion in very well defined cases.
Yes.
And now the question comes, did you look at the possibility of constructing a Hamiltonian for which posmon would be constant of the motion?
Okay, so that's actually quite a difficult question. It turns out that the posmon wave function is not related bijectively to the position wave function. So you can go from the position wave function to the posmon wave function, but you cannot go in reverse from posmon.
What I mean is to construct an operator which commutes with posmon, and then you can get Hamiltonian which commutes, and from such Hamiltonian.
My answer is to indicate that I don't think that is possible. I don't think it's possible, and it's because the posmon wave function has less information in it than the position wave function or the momentum wave function, which is quite surprising. But the reason for this is connected with the fact that this posmon, you noticed all my posmon densities are even functions. Negative and positive values are equivalent. And if you... We can talk later. Okay.
I think I was not clear.
Okay.
Concerning this interesting invariance of this harmonic oscillator programs, apparently posmonic music is very monotonic, I guess.
That's right.
Like on the instrument, I guess, something like. More seriously, you had a comment about having mounted a dilatation, which in a sense corresponds with the shift, but in the other representation. But it's not all that surprising when you compare momentum and position, because in a sense, a shift in position, in a sense, implies a scaling of momentum in a certain sense.
In a certain sense, yes. Yes, yeah. It was still a bit surprising to us that the posmon was such a simple function of the position wave function, just simply a dilation and an anti-dilation.
That's very interesting.
Very, very simple.
I think that we should continue later because we are just next. So let's thank again our speaker.